investigating truth in a world of lies. You are listening to the John Age Project.
Trust no one. Trust no one. Trust no one.
Welcome to the Anomic Age. I'm your host, John Age. I want to thank you very much for joining us today on the program. Got a great show for you yet again. Got Terry LaPointe coming up in a little bit. Got a little, I'm going to say we're going to forego the news for this episode, but we definitely have a bit to talk about before we get into the program full bore with our guests. As usual, if you have not already done so, why not? Please check out AnomicAge.com. Share that link with your friends, family, loved ones, and enemies. It's a great site. Maybe I'm a little biased. It's a great site. Very nice, new, working news RSS feed. No more duplicate images. So that's a positive. We've recently added the Patreon link, so if you are so inclined, you can most definitely contribute via Patreon. If that's not quite your thing, you can definitely click right above that to the PayPal link, and you can just click on the PayPal link and donate right there to the program. And if all of that doesn't work for you, you can always just go to PayPal directly. You can forego all that jazz. PayPal.me/AnomicAge. I encourage you to do that also. I keep beating this horse a little bit, but the show's not cheap. It's not easy. It's very rewarding. I won't say fun, because if you look at the topics that I've discussed on this, just the last month alone, it's quite dark. It's not going to get any brighter today as far as that goes, but very rewarding to do this program. It's what I've always wanted to do. It makes me feel at least fulfilled. But it's not cheap. It's not easy. It takes a lot of time and a whole lot of work. So I implore you, AnomicAge.com. If you can do nothing else, I understand. Times are tough. Just share the link. Put it all over your social media. Like it. Subscribe to it. And always, please, subscribe. I believe you can now subscribe on Brighteon as well. They've made some changes on that site. So I believe you can now subscribe on Brighteon. You can most definitely subscribe on YouTube while I'm still there. Facebook, you can follow me there. Twitter, you can follow me there as well. So check all those things out. And share, like, enjoy. Anomic Age has got tons of great guests. If you've missed any of the guests on this program, I highly suggest you going back. Maybe you fall behind. You're like, oh, I'm just going to skip four or five guests. Please go back in the archive there. Check out all of the guests on the show, because they have, with no exceptions, brought something critical to the show, to kind of your overall understanding. I kind of refer to life as the show sometimes, but to your overall understanding of what's going on. Because there's no single person that's going to do it. There's so many things going on out there on so many facets of our life here in the United States and the global lives of people around the world. So there is so much going on. You're not going to get all that from one guest or just one interview. It's going to take a lot. And I've come nowhere near scratching the surface of that. But the guest that we have today and the guests that we've had over the last almost year now have brought so much to the table. So if you haven't done so, please check out all those guest links. You can watch the videos on the site. You can watch those videos on Brighteon. You can watch them on YouTube as well. So there are a lot of ways to follow what we do here in the Anomic Age. So please, if you haven't already done so, check it out. Do it. Share that link with your friends, family, loved ones, and enemies. Other things to get into. We could get into the full fray of political buffoonery that's going on. And I probably should. I've kind of switched my game up over the last few episodes and covered increasingly less news because I've felt that it's kind of become more pertinent for me, at least, to not just discuss the news each and every episode, but perhaps just get into, I don't know, what many people might just call the minutiae of life, of being an activist, of speaking out against the things that are going on. I wouldn't really classify it as minutiae. I would say this is definitely some key information that we've been talking about in the last few episodes. So if you're a huge fan of my news coverage, thank you. I'll probably get back to that in coming weeks. Check out the RSS feed. There's a lot there as well. But I believe a lot of people are also becoming pretty darn acquainted with what we're doing around here as far as just covering what the heck you need to do. How can we do this? I close every show by saying you can't do everything, but you can do something. You can. C-A-N. You can do something. As that old Henry Ford quote that says something to the effect, if you believe you can't do something, or if you believe that you can do something, you're right. And that's absolute fact. So if you sit there and say, there's nothing I can do, I can't do anything, we're screwed, we're doomed, we're not going to get it done, forget it, cue the music, I'm going to go in the back of the Titanic and just have a ball while this the whole thing sinks. That's what we're going to do. Now, so if you believe that, you're dead on right. You're completely and utterly right. But the inverse is also true. So if you believe that you can make a difference, your little bitty part can help. Your little bitty part. That's what I just said. Your little bitty part can help. Talking to that guy in the grocery store, talking to that girl who's about to give her kids some GMO or some fluoride water, what have you. It's going to take a little bit of that. Yeah, you don't have to get in everybody's face and go crazy. Like I often say to my own daughter, it's all in how you say stuff. And children are that perfect mirror to what you're doing wrong and right. But I think for many people, we focus more on the wrong than the right. So if you see your progeny saying or acting in a way that's not right, you kind of have to look at yourself, oh yeah, man, I said that a couple days ago. That was terrible. What the heck? What was I thinking? And that's true. So it's all in how you say something. So you can go over there to that person that's about to give their kid GMO and say, I can't believe you're doing this. You're wrong. It's crazy. Or you can say, hey, you know, you don't know me. I don't know you. But have you looked into this food GMO thing? It's not good. You don't even have to say it's not good. You see, have you looked into it? There's all kinds of ways to talk to people and to start conversations and to have that dialogue with people that don't involve beating people over the head with stuff and coming off in a negative light. Because we all know you're not going to get anything but negative attention if somebody comes over to you and starts hitting you over the head with something and say, hey, buddy, you're doing this all wrong. I can't believe you. What are you doing there? Yeah, that's not going to get any kind of positive response at all. So it is indeed all in how you say it. But to my larger point, what I was saying, if you believe you can't or you can, you're right. So I've kind of been focusing on different elements of what I perceive to be the problem lately, or people fixing the problem. And I'll go back to this point. I've mentioned it a few episodes ago. It's all internal. It's all within. So if everyone out there starts going not so much extrinsically, but inside. Don't go outside so much. You can go outside all day and start, I'm going to fix this over here, and that guy over there is being a jerk, and I need to talk to this lady about this. Knock all that off. Knock all that off. If you start focusing on thyself, that doesn't mean just be a complete narcissist and say, oh, you know, screw the world. I'm not going to help anybody. It's all about me. I'm number one. And you're throwing that number one up with the wrong finger. Yeah, you can do that. But that's not what I'm talking about. That's not where I'm trying to say we need to go, both individually, culturally, and perhaps globally. But you got to start mending your own fences. So before you start going out there and saying, hey, buddy, you got to, yeah, take a look at your own stock. Take a look at that. Because I guarantee you, once you get all of your own fences mended, it's a day. It's a wrap. It's time to go to sleep again. So think about that when you're sitting out there thinking about browbeating someone. You don't have to browbeat anybody. You could just talk to people. But get internal. Start fixing your own stuff. Start fixing your family stuff. You know, I use the analogy of the fence there. It's quite apropos. But yeah, you know, if you feel like internally, yo, I need to be a better person in this avenue or in that avenue, or hey, I could probably talk a little bit better, the mailman, that wasn't nice. All these sort of small things that, again, are focusing on the internal. They're focusing on perhaps your own internal mechanisms as well as your family and loved ones in your immediate household. So once you get those things knocked out, kind of like I said a minute ago, once you get that little bit, your own little microcosm under control. If everybody just got their own little microcosm under control, poof. I'm not trying to be all hippie on you. Like, hey, bro, it's going to be fabulous, man. No, no, it's not. But if you just get your own little self and your own little household under control, everybody doing that would be phenomenal. So we got to start thinking that way. We got to start mending our own fences before we start criticizing and battering other people's fences down. To my point at the beginning, though, it doesn't mean you shouldn't talk about these things to people. It just means you got to speak nicely. I can't believe you're vaccinating, Jim, you loser. No. Jim's going to hate you, and he should. So you got to speak to people nicely. But while you're doing that, keep in mind, I got to mend my own fences. I got to be a better person. I got to make sure my kids are better, my wife and I's relationship is better, my relationship's better with my mom, my father, the mailman, and so forth. Once we get all those little I's dotted and T's crossed, then we can start to look externally. But so many people are afraid to do that. I mean, I always say you can't do everything, but you can do something. I think a lot of people get, to borrow an old heavy metal song, caught in the mosh. They don't know what to do. And they just kind of throw their hands up and say, forget about it. I'm cutting on Netflix. I'm going to bed. I'm not going to deal with this. Until the NSA sends a global hawk to blow my house up, I'm not going to worry about it. Until CPS or fill-in-the-blank alphabet soup agency comes and steals my kids, I'm not going to worry about it. That's somebody else's problem. They're dealing with it. That's their own bad luck. Screw them. I'm going to focus on my Netflix and my singing show or my dancing show or the game, fellas. We're all I'm just playing dress-up time. We're all going to watch the game, right? Yeah, I'm watching the game. Hey, did you hear about this guy who got his guns taken with a red flag gun laws? It doesn't matter. I'm watching that game. This is great stuff, you loser. What are you talking about, that stuff? Let's talk about the game. I know all the stats in my head. I'm a walking almanac of sports. Come on, fellas. So I think that's another issue. A lot of people don't know what the heck to do. And a lot of people are intimidated societally. They're afraid of speaking out. They're afraid of standing up. Because it all goes back to the psychology and the sociology and all these things that we've been talking about. Bit by bit, we've been putting another piece in that puzzle. If you remember a couple episodes back, we were talking about all these psychological issues. And the psychologists that studied this decades, centuries ago, many of them. If you remember the Ash studies, the line studies. The gentleman's last name was Ash, the psychologist. But he was doing these line studies. And he was basically, you know, to recap in case you missed that episode, I can't imagine why. But he was basically showing these different lines to subjects. And the subject would be questioned, say, okay, well, which one of these lines falls in this sequence? Or which one of these lines is longer? Which one is shorter? And so forth. Various questions that they would have to answer. And the subject might say, well, okay, well, this one's obviously the longest one. And the examiner would say, no, that's wrong. It's this one. And then over a few moments, the subject would eventually change their response and say, okay, well, it's this one. I'm going to conform. I'm going to go along to get along. And there's a lot of variations on those studies, but the bottom line is people want to be accepted and want to be liked and want to get that pat on the head. They want to get that conditioning reinforcement of good job, that attaboy. The operant conditioning versus the classical, all those, we talked about this. And whether you realize it or not, that's what people want. So they're afraid of getting the negative attention. They're afraid of getting the backlash at work. They're afraid of so-and-so in the next building over not liking them because they now have discovered that you're perhaps conservative, or perhaps you want the borders closed, or perhaps you don't want transgendered people in libraries, all these things. So at some point it becomes what I've mentioned quite often. It's a social engineering experiment. That's what's going on here. It's social engineering. So when you can convince the populace that, hey, I better just shut up and go along to get along. Yeah, I know this line's longer, but if I just say it's the other line, I'm going to get the pat on the head. I'm going to get that treat. I'm like that pigeon hitting the lever. I'm going to get that positive reinforcement rather than the negative. So many people are afraid of that. And that's a big part of this deal. That's it. That's a huge part of it. And for me, I kind of come back to this thing my grandmother told me, I know, and I know my mom's told me this many times as well. As a kid or adolescent, you know, you might come home and say, well, so-and-so's saying this and so-and-so's disparaging me on this point or so forth. You know, just the normal life stuff. So-and-so's basically talking junk and putting me down at this level or that. My mom, my grandma both would say this. They would say, consider the source. So for those people who didn't have that told to them or who perhaps don't get what I'm saying, they were saying, consider the source of who is throwing you these barbs or these disparaging comments. Consider the source of who's making fun of you or who's talking junk about you, who's not being nice, who's being ugly from the South. You know what's up with that. Being ugly, being not nice, being unkind. So you got to consider the source. And that's a very true statement. It's one of those easier said than done statements. Especially if you're a kid, and apparently, I'd say in adulthood now. I kind of go back to this point quite often. I think adolescence in high school has just been transposed into all of reality. Because most of the people that you see at the grocery store, the doctor's office, at school, whatever you want to throw in there, whatever, it doesn't matter. Most of them are dealing with those same emotions. They're just now dealing with them as a 70-year-old man or a 50-year-old woman or whatever. They're still dealing with these same things. And they're failing to consider the source. They're failing to consider, hey, this person talking junk and saying all this bad stuff about me is just a communist dirtbag. Or it's just a bot. It's not even a real person. Or it's just someone that I don't care about in the least. I put no stock into what they say because they're completely unreliable. Everything they say, it's like Snopes. Whatever you put into Snopes, Snopes is going to tell you it's not what you say it is. It's always going to be something else. There's these several other ones, these fact-checking engines out there now. And it's all part of the Chinese social score model, which is nothing more than the U.S. model that was already being rolled out here. They took all the top scientists over there and rolled it out there as sort of a test phase before they rolled it out fully here. So what you're seeing there is what you're going to see here. They always roll it out on an unsuspecting population, be that the black population, the Native American population, the South African population, fill in the blank. It's always rolled out on an unsuspecting populace before it goes full throttle in the greater populace. It's always the same plan. Like I said before, if you just put on your They Live glasses, you will begin to see this stuff for what it is, and it's just, it's omnipresent. It's everywhere. Once you begin to see a couple of these things, you become awakened to everything. And it quite literally is like the Matrix. You have plugged in fully, and your brain is getting this mind-blowing download of information perpetually. And when you see these, in my humble opinion, very juvenile, false flags, very pathetic propaganda pieces, it's all such a joke. And when you see it for what it is, it kind of becomes comical. And it's just like, oh, there it is again. It's total horse pucky. Don't even worry about it. You're considering the source. You're doing what they're telling you should never do. You're being judgmental. Oh, don't be judgmental. Don't do that. Don't say that this person talking to me and cutting me down and being a piece of garbage is in fact just that, a piece of garbage. And I shouldn't listen to anything they say. I should never take what they have to say at any sort of face value. Come on. I mean, that's like the equivalent of CNN coming out with a big hit piece on me. Or on fill in the blank other person out there. Yeah, of course. they're going to do that. What, do you expect something else? You got to consider the source. They're dirtbags. Of course they're going to do that sort of scum. They're lowbrow filth. Yeah, it's no brainer, right? But a lot of people are still caught in that thing. And I'll throw these two terms out there that a lot of people can pick up on. This one is an old sociology term from a gentleman named Charles Horton. It's a term that says looking glass self. Looking glass self. So you're peering into the looking glass. So the looking glass self concept is basically just, to distill it down at a base point here, it's saying that the way you perceive yourself, you're picking up cues on how you perceive yourself based on your interactions with other people and how they perceive you. So if people think you're, oh, you're that conservative guy. Oh, you're that libertarian guy. Oh, no. You mean you don't believe in killing babies? Whoa. I mean, this guy probably believes in closed borders and stuff, and he probably thinks there shouldn't be trans in the library talking to kids. You know, I mean, all these things that you're picking up on this, right? So if you start to believe all that, you fall into that perception is reality sort of click. You know, that's another one of those terms that I believe is kind of more digestible than looking glass self. Perception is reality. You hear that a lot. Perception is reality. Perception is reality. Yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, it is. I mean, if you hit that 100th monkey zeitgeist point where you've got like the whole reality going, orange man bad, you know, it starts to hit that zeitgeist and it's like everybody believes the hype even though it's not legitimate. So what I'm thinking is that you really have to guard against that. You've got to see it for what it is. You've got to be judgmental and you've got to say, hey, this is baloney. I'm not believing that. That's garbage. You got to go against the looking glass self. You got to say, nah, I'm going to define my own reality. I know this Trump thing's a witch hunt scam. I know CNN's fake. I'll be nice. I'll just say, CNN's fake. There you go. Clean it up there. So I think people need to really digest that and get in there and say, okay, of course. You got to take the power back. Stop giving these people credence when they deserve none. So, I mean, to connect a lot of dots to other things I've said, your silence is your consent. So if you're sitting there in neutral going, I don't know what to say, maybe I'm just not going to say anything. I shouldn't speak out against this because they're not going to like me anymore at the frozen food place or the frozen yogurt place or what have you. Like they're going to look down at me if they find out that I actually believe that life is precious and shouldn't be killed, or I think that the government's unconstitutional when they're spying on me, or the fact that all of our communications are now openly being monitored. So I think people need to wise up and people need to stand up and say, all right, I'm going to define my own reality. Hey, Bob doesn't like me anymore because I'm right of Mao. Then forget about Bob. Forget about Steve if he thinks I'm a dirtbag because I don't want pedophiles talking to my kids at the library. You know what I'm saying? You get what I'm saying, I hope. So I think at some point people got to stand up and get some temerity and say, hey, I don't care what they think about me. I'm defining my own reality. I'm considering the source. That guy's a dirtbag. Forget about him. If he hates me, awesome. All the better. I'm a walking cliche today, but yeah, you know, I would rather be hated for who I am than loved for who I'm not. Another great quote. I completely agree with that. So people have to stand up and people have to have some courage to do something, to do what you know is right. I've said this before a lot. You got to do what you know in your heart is right. If your heart's sitting there telling you, yo, this is crazy. What am I doing? I'm getting the heck out of here. You got to stop consenting with your silence. You've got to stop consenting by just saying, well, I don't know what to do. I guess we'll just stick it out and see what happens. No, you don't have to do that at all. Your silence is your consent. By not standing up, you are standing down. By not saying no, you are saying, yes, sir, I will. So you got to have some gumption here. I'll say this, do something if it's wrong. Even if it's wrong, if you find out down the road, like, yo, I was wrong on that, that wasn't cool, then come out and say, hey, I made a mistake. No big deal. I made a mistake. The information I just gave you was proven to be irrelevant, not factual, what have you. That was me. My bad. It doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't mean you're going on a blacklist. It doesn't mean you will forever be known as that guy. But it is what it is, man. It is what it is. So do something, even if it is wrong. Do something. That's kind of what I'm getting at here. You can't just sit idly by. You can't just sit in neutral thinking, I don't know what to do. You can't live in fear of how others are going to perceive you. You can't live in fear of maybe I'm going to lose this friend or this social connection or contact. Fine. Awesome. I say bring it. That's great. Oh, I just lost this guy. He's not my friend anymore. Awesome. Insert expletive here. Him. I don't care. Great. He doesn't like me anymore. Awesome. Great. One less person to send a Christmas card to. No big deal on my part. Awesome. Smooth. Because once you start taking the power back and stop consenting, you will begin to feel the pride within yourself. You'll begin to say, yeah, I'm doing something. You know, have I got a plane flying with a big billboard on the side of the highway? Have I got a radio show that billions of people are listening to every day? Is my YouTube channel getting 3,000 hits per second? You know, all that stuff? No. But you're doing something. You talk to that lady in the checkout line, and you mentioned the GMO thing. The guy you bumped into at the post office, he said, I think these red flag gun laws are a little crazy. You saw this guy had an NRA shirt on. You talked him up a little bit. You don't have to get in his business. You don't have to jump down his throat. You don't have to go eat with the guy or hang out later. Just these small conversations, I think, are integral. They're integral in spreading the message. They're integral in making you feel better about yourself. And they're also integral in making you, the individual, feel not so alone. You stop getting up going, maybe I'm the crazy person. I can't believe it. Maybe red flag gun laws are okay. Maybe I should have taken the blue pill. All these things that people begin to think after enough isolation. After enough isolation, you start to think crazy stuff. So just doing these little things, I think, are really going to help everyone. And these are things that you have to practice. Like, me saying this stuff doesn't mean that I have it wired, because I am notoriously bad at talking to random people. Not because I'm shy or like I feel like I don't have anything to say. It's kind of quite the contrary. It's kind of, I'll clean this up a bit. It's kind of that I just don't want to talk to people. I'm not interested in talking to people typically. It's not, I don't like fear what they're going to say to me or have some shy whatever. It's just like, I don't want to deal with that person. I'm good. Whatever. Maybe I'll see him next year. You know, this happened, I think it was last weekend. I saw somebody in a store that I hadn't seen in a while. We weren't friends. We weren't close or anything. It was just someone I had known in the past. And I very easily could have said, hey there, how's it going? I didn't. I was just like what am I going to say? I got nothing. So the things that I'm telling you, don't get the idea that like I'm telling you from this demigod, you need to do this or you're nothing. No, I'm saying we're all imperfect creatures. These are all things that we all need to work on and that we all can and should be doing. You don't have to have it all figured out today or tomorrow or next year even. Just start the process of figuring it out. That's kind of what we're getting at. Nobody's perfect here. Jesus is not walking among us right now. So I can pretty much say without question, nobody's perfect. We're all going to work on this stuff. And these are all things that you need to practice. It sounds kind of silly, but you might have to dialogue these things out with yourself sometimes. Especially if you're alone in traffic for a long span of time, you know, you might have these great points to think about things. My wife and I were talking about this. It was in relation to something else, but it was basically the distilled down point was people need to have something to say when they're put in compromising situations. So if you're in a situation, this doesn't affect me now at all because I'm far beyond that, but if you're in a situation and you don't drink and people are like, hey, you want a beer, Scott? Come on over here. You can just be like, nah, I'm good. It sounds simple enough, right? Nah, I'm good. But if you juxtapose that and look at people having to say that when they're an adolescent at a function or maybe in your early 20s and all these things, where all the cues out there in society are saying, this is what you do. This is a norm. This is how you get the pat on the head. This is how you get the data boy. This is how you get all that positive reinforcement. So by you saying, nah, I'm good, you know, as a 41-year-old man, it's no big deal. I could care less. Doesn't even cross my brain for a millisecond. But you have to think about that. I mean, that's me coming at this. So other people are coming at this from all different perspectives, walks of life, and angles. So you might have to really practice this stuff out. You might have to think about it in the car when you're by yourself. Like, okay, when so-and-so at the workplace tries to interject all this political mumbo-jumbo into the meeting, and I know it's a bunch of bunk, what am I going to say? Well, in the meeting, if you know, it's a big group, you don't really have to say much. You can. But I think these things are more pertinent when it's a more of an individual basis. What are you going to say when it's like, hey there, Mitch, you know you believe in this, right? You're a big fan of these red flag gun laws. You think they should take these things, right? Huh? That's when you're on the spot. That's when the spotlight's on you and it's your turn to either say nope or keep going along to get along and say, yes, sir, I will. So those are the times that you have to practice. What are you going to say? Well, are you going to turn it up to 12 and just take it to a crazy level and start berating this guy with insults? Or are you going to perhaps incrementally see how it goes? Like, no, man, I don't really think those laws are constitutional. I think it's just a bunch of garbage where they're trying to disarm the citizenry for a larger agenda. So you can take it step by step. You don't have to take it to 12. You can start out at 1. And hopefully you don't take it to 12. Before it gets to 12, you can just withdraw your consent and be like, you know, that's how I feel about it. I'm out of here, man. I got to go take back some videotapes. So my point is, sometimes you got to practice this stuff. It's not going to come easy. You got to do some research, do your own due diligence, figure out where you stand, figure out the facts. And once you get those things handled, then you can react accordingly. You don't have to sit there and snivel and wish I said something. And you don't have to take it at 12. You can go somewhere in the middle. And you can always withdraw your consent and say, hey, I don't really want to talk about this right now. I got more important things to do. So all of these are avenues to take. But the most important one is actually doing something. Don't just sit there and take it. Don't consent. Stop consenting to unconstitutional nonsense. Say, nah, this is a bunch of garbage. I'm good. Nevertheless, just food for thought here in the anomic age. So, please, share the links, friends, family, loved ones, and enemies, and stick around for just a mere matter of seconds, and in just a few, we'll introduce our guest and get into a whole nother ballgame of topics. Stick around. It is my pleasure to welcome Terry LaPointe into the Anomic Age today. Terry was the lead investigative journalist for MedicalKidnap.com, a division of Health Impact News, for more than 4 years, where she investigated and published articles on hundreds of cases involving family members, mostly children, taken from families by Child or Adult Protective Services. She continues her work as an independent investigative journalist at realnewsspark.com. She's a contributing author to 2 books and a regular guest on Blog Talk and many other radio programs. She received Michelle Malkin's Bulldog Award for her investigative work on medical kidnapping in 2017. Thank you so much, Terry. It's a pleasure to speak with you finally.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. It's great to finally talk to you. And we were sort of kicking this around a little bit off air, but this is really a dark topic. And I feel like I keep saying the same things on many shows because my wife and I will speak before or after the show, and she always is like, how do you do this? How do you talk about this stuff? Because, I mean, it's not joke, but I'm sort of like, it's going to be another upbeat show today. We're going to talk about this and that. And she's like, good grief, this is just dark. And it very much is. So I guess for the folks that are uninformed, or I just kind of see it as a cognitive dissonance, there's a lot of people that I think realize something is wrong, but don't know what perhaps or how deep down the rabbit hole these things go. So I suppose just start with giving everybody a cursory intro to what the heck medical kidnapping is, because this is a pretty dark topic that I think a lot of people think of, oh, that must happen in another country, or they've seen like the movie Taken or something and see it as something like that. But it's, in my opinion, far more nefarious because it's happening right here in America, sadly, right now.
Right now, every day, and across the world. And so medical kidnapping is pretty much defined as the taking of a family member by government authorities, child protective services, adult protective services, for medical kinds of reasons. And child protective services, as I've learned, is not just about protecting children from abuse. I used to think that child protective services only got involved when there were horrible, abusive parents that were beating the heck out of their kids and doing awful, awful things, and they were protecting the children, putting them in foster care and all of that. And I thought foster care is such a wonderful thing, just nice, wonderful people. And I've known some, and I know some really wonderful foster parents, but I've come to the conclusion that they're pretty much deceived because of that what they're working with and enabling is far darker and nefarious than we could ever have imagined. So the concept of medical issues being involved, I thought, you know, if you have this whole big thing with child protective services, the part that's medical is just a small part of it. But what I've learned in now 5 years of investigating, it's the center of it. It is what started the whole child abuse and foster care system. And it is a part of almost every case that is involved with child protective services. So it's much bigger and much deeper, much more intertwined than I think any of us. I haven't gotten all the way to the bottom of it. There's still more I'm learning all the time.
Certainly. I mean, it's such an admirable pursuit because, I mean, sadly, kind of like we were saying, I mean, this isn't something your average person's like, oh yeah, I want to get into child kidnapping, or I want to get into, you know, kids that are being abducted, or I want to get into people that are committing suicide and all this stuff. Like, this isn't a fun, glossy topic for the water cooler typically. So what kind of led you into this path?
Well, I was a homeschool mom and a labor doula, childbirth breastfeeding educator, and assistant midwife. So I was all about studying about parent-child bonding and the parental-child relationship, and all about birth, breastfeeding, and taking care of nurturing kids. And I saw the story of Justina Pelletier out of Boston, a teenager who was taken from her family because one hospital disagreed with the diagnosis of the primary care doctor, and child protective services got involved and almost killed this young lady. And it was an awful story. And I was following it with fascination, thinking, this has got to be an anomaly, because surely this can't really happen. Now, I had heard of homeschoolers being unfairly targeted by child protective services, but I really thought that was the only place that they got it wrong. And so I knew about homeschool legal defense and all of that. So I was following the story with interest, and I started doing some writing on the side to just kind of supplement our income. And I was covering all kinds of things, but I covered a couple of stories that were related to this just because I wanted to know what was really happening. And that caught the attention of the editor of Health Impact News, who had, was getting more and more of these stories coming into their publication. And so he was looking for someone to investigate these stories, and they contacted me and said, would you be interested in investigating these stories and seeing what's going on? And I said, sure, because I wanted to know, as a mom, what was going on. And none of us had the slightest clue what we were getting into. I had no idea.
It's definitely the deep end of the pool. I mean, I know like a cursory amount compared to what you know, but I mean, I kind of look at the legal system and the, I just say the medical mafia in kind of the same light. I say, you know, as long as you can stay as far away from those two entities, you're probably better off, because you will get so entangled in the tar of those two entities. I mean, I've heard a lot of these stories where a parent will take their child in that fell down on the swing set and they got a bruise and so forth and so on, where, you know, next thing they know, CPS is at their house, the child's getting taken, they're having to prove their innocence rather than, you know, them, the court having to prove the guilt. It's sort of the inverse of it, what you would assume it to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that is very, very common. What we started seeing in these stories was a group of doctors known as child abuse pediatricians, and the child abuse doctor, and I started seeing these being in most of these stories. And so we started digging deeper and deeper to learn what these guys are. And it's really only been within the last year, even in the last few months, that I've realized how much more serious this is than anybody can imagine. Their job, they're stationed at almost every children's hospital throughout the country. Mm-hmm. And they've only been board certified since 2010. So it's a fairly new board certification, but they've been around for a long time. And I've dug down into the history of it, which goes back longer than probably you and I have been put together alive. Mm-hmm. Deep history, where they set themselves up as the experts, and their job is to determine whether something was abuse or not. And that sounds really good, right?
Sure.
But you know who they're being paid by? They're not funded by insurance and the other things like your regular doctor, your regular person you go to, your cardiologist or whatever. They're funding, a lot of the funding for these child abuse teams comes through state and federal funds through Health and Human Services and the Child Protective Services. Mm. So they're literally being funded by the very people who are taking the children. So a very fascinating thing that we just learned, this was in a Texas Policy Institute paper from February about child abuse pediatricians. And they found that when child abuse pediatricians are involved, they confirm abuse in 80% of the cases, whereas when they're not involved, it's only 22% of the cases. And this is just in Texas, so mm-hmm. I'm sure that it can extrapolate to more broad, but we don't have that data yet. But one out of three of those cases is overturned on appeal, and most parents don't ever get to that point of being able to appeal. They can't afford it, or things don't get on the record like they're supposed to. They don't get their defense there. And it's really hard for parents to appeal. It sounds like it would be a lot easier, but it's not. And so there's a lot of innocent people who are having their children taken because a child abuse pediatrician said it was abuse and it's not. And I figured this out a long time ago, that I would have a report from a child abuse pediatrician on one side, and I would have 6, 8, 10, 12 reports from real medical doctors who were actual experts in the field of which this kid had an issue. And they were saying, no, this isn't abuse. This is a real medical condition. This is not child abuse. This child has a real medical condition. They're medically complex, or there's medical things going on that are causing these symptoms that mimic abuse. Mm-hmm. And what would happen often in the courts and with Child Protective Services, the social workers and the attorneys, they would take that one report from the child abuse pediatrician and they would sweep aside all the others and completely ignore those. And so we have people, and this happens even in criminal court, we'll have people in prison, and we've had people on death row for shaken baby syndrome, and they didn't do it. There was no crime actually committed. This baby didn't die because they were actually abused, and people lose their children, lose their livelihoods, lose everything they've got, and some go to prison, even death row, for something they didn't do because a child abuse pediatrician said it was abuse. Oh. It's horrible. One of the things that we've learned is that when a child is a ward of the state, they can legally be used for medical research, medical testing, drug testing, without their parents' knowledge or consent.
Mm-hmm. That's so a huge variable right there.
It is. It is. Because there's been several cases, quite a few cases, where a parent will walk into a hospital with a child and they're trying to find out what's going on with this child, or this child's just been diagnosed with a rare medical condition, and just so happens, coincidentally, that somebody at that hospital is doing a medical research project on that very same condition. Well, you know what? They make up allegations and they start accusing the parents, usually of something like Munchausen syndrome by proxy, and they have the kids taken away so that they can enter them into this medical research. That has happened on quite a number of occasions. Even if they're taken for other reasons, then they can still put them on medications. Children in foster care are much, much, much more likely to be put on psychotropic drugs than other children. Now, you would think, oh, well, you know, that kind of makes sense. They were abused and beaten in their own home, so, you know, they've got some emotional issues. Well, most of these kids actually were not beaten or abused in their own home. The statistics actually show, and this is federal data from the AFCARS report, report that says that less than 16% of the children who are taken from their families are taken for reasons of any kind of abuse.
Jeez, less than 16.
Yeah. I mean, neglect can be, you wanted a second opinion, medically neglected your child. Maybe you don't believe in vaccines and you decide you didn't want a vaccine or you wanted to space them out. Maybe you decided, you know what, this doctor said that they need to take my child's kidney because they've got cancer, and they didn't do a biopsy. I would kind of like more testing. I would like to confirm that my child actually has cancer before you take a major organ from my child. That happened. That literally happened. So she got her kids taken away. Neglect can be, a six-year-old was too short. Everybody else in the family was short too, but yeah, the six-year-old was too short. There's too many dishes in the sink, laundry on the laundry room floor, or Cheetos in front of the TV in the living room. All of these things can be considered neglect. These things can be based on false allegations. Your neighbor gets mad, or your mother-in-law doesn't like the way you're doing something, and they call and make a report because they're mad at you. And all they need, Child Protective Services, is just get that foot in the door. And once they've got their foot in the door, they're looking for anything that they can do if they want a child, if they need to get their quota or get some kind of match and get a child that day. So it doesn't really matter what you've done, because I dare say every family in America has done something that some social worker has taken children for.
Mm-hmm. That's the truth. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and then back to the numbers, 16% taken for reasons of abuse. Only 17% of the allegations all across the country, only 17% of the allegations are even substantiated. Only 17%. Now, you can, a social worker who maybe has no kid, just got out of college, knows nothing about how to actually raise kids, and they can decide that this is substantiated. They're just deciding it's substantiated. They may not have looked at any exonerating evidence. They can do it based on hearsay, based on lies. substantiated is not the equivalent of a guilty verdict in a court of law with your a criminal court with your peers. You haven't had all the due process and all that thing to have a substantiated finding, but it carries the same weight as in if you've got a substantiated finding, you can lose your kids or never get them back or have your parental rights terminated. And if they just simply drag the case out, a case that has no basis, no merit, nothing valid to start it out with because of the Clinton's Adoption and Safe Families Act of 1997, because they put a timeline of 15 months. If that child has been in foster care for 15 months and nothing's really happened and you've never got your evidence heard or whatever and you did nothing wrong, they can say, social worker can go to the judge, well, judge, it's in this child's best interest to be adopted by these foster parents and have the parental rights terminated because the child's been in foster care too long.
Yeah, meanwhile, they just tied up the legal system so that would have happened.
Exactly. It happens all the time. I'm finding out that Congress, the people in Congress, don't like that time limit. I'm finding that on both sides of the aisle, the people that we've talked to recently are not liking that time limit because it's artificial and it can certainly be used to the advantage of social services.
And it sounds like everything is completely subjective. It's sort of based on whatever the social worker says. There could be no evidence, little evidence, or full evidence, and it's pretty much just what they say goes. I mean, there seems to be no, this child's got beat marks all over its back. No, it could just be like, well, like you said, I mean, there's food on the floor, and the dishes were dirty in the sink. And every parent knows that happens a time or 12, you know.
Yeah, closer to the 12, probably.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. And so what is considered neglect by one social worker may be considered what is part of the case plan by another social worker. I mean, it just is very, very subjective. One social worker, and I've seen this, plenty of social workers tell parents that they need to get divorced. You will never get your kids back unless you could divorce dad or you divorce mom. And then they divorce and it was just a carrot dangling in front of them. But then other social workers will say, no, you have to stay together. I know he's beating you I don't believe you that he's beating you, but you have to stay with this guy and stay in this relationship or you'll never get your kids back. So it's very capricious. It's almost like in the fairy tales, almost like the fairies that just are very capricious and pulling people's chains.
I mean, and meanwhile, the kid is just totally destroyed. I mean, you think about it, you know, a mom and dad are rushing to get off work. They get their kid in the pediatrician at 4:30. They got a fever and so forth and so on, whatever. You know, 12 hours later, the kid's gone and the kid's totally don't know what the heck's going on. The parents are freaking out and they're, you know, like you were saying, trying to capitulate in any way possible to the system to get their kid back. Meanwhile, the system's doing everything they can to drag the process out, make the litigation longer, make the attorney fees and so forth just continue. I mean, this is just unbelievable.
And there's plenty of studies even that show that just a few hours away in a situation like that can be traumatizing to a child. I mean, you can have lifelong trauma from a situation like that, and they're putting these kids through months and years of this trauma, and there's not any thought given to the trauma that they put these children through and the fact that they're attached to their parents, they're sometimes breastfeeding or just never been away from mom or dad, never spent the night away, and all of a sudden they're with strangers. And sometimes these strangers are good, wonderful people who actually care, but in a whole lot of cases, they're not good, wonderful people and they don't care, or they're doing it for a paycheck, or they're pedophiles. There's a lot of pedophilia in the foster care and adoption industry. Lots and lots of it. Children, once they are put in foster care, they are at least six times. And that's the small end of the figures that I've seen. I'm saying the low end of it. at least 6 times more likely to be raped, molested, abused, or even killed in foster care than if you left them in their own home, even if that home is a troubled home. And there are study after study that shows this. So it's not that the fix is, okay, well, we're going to err on the side of the child. We're going to put them in a situation that's going to be better anyway, you know, just in case. You know, if that was the case, maybe you could make an argument for it, but that's not the case. You're taking them from a situation that may or may not be bad. Maybe it could be worked through. Maybe this family is just going through a tough season. Mm-hmm. Maybe there really is something wrong, but it's just a tough season and they're going to get through it because that's what people do. We work through things, we overcome, and we grow. That's life. That is literally what we call life. And so now you're traumatizing these children and you're causing great, great trauma and even death and irreparable damage. And all at taxpayers' expense. We're putting billions of dollars of taxpayer money into this. We're not helping, we're hurting.
I mean, I think you already touched on this, but I always kind of come back to the who benefits, the qui bono, who's benefiting from all this. And I kind of liken so much of our society, and I know this might be a little rough for some people, but to like a pimps and hoes situation. The pimps are always the feds, and they're doling out the money and whatever to the states or to these state bureaucratic organizations, be it universities, CPS, public schools, what have you. And it's kind of the same old line. As long as you're in pocket and doing what you're supposed to, according to the state, everything's fine. You know, you just keep following that mantra, doing your thing. But if anybody sort of steps out of line and goes, hey, well, I think this is kind of crazy, they'll start pulling the purse strings. So, I mean, it makes all these different agencies beholden to the feds. It's just so insane to me. I'm like, stop taking the money. Stop it.
Yeah. And actually, I've been working with this amazing lady, Kathleen Arthur, out of Washington State. She's a warrior, grandma warrior, she calls herself. And going to Washington, D.C. and talking to legislators about bills and trying to fix this sick, perverse federal incentive. And she has a really simple solution to a huge part of it, is this federal funding. You know, states don't want to lose this federal funding. She said, okay, why don't we make this funding contingent, be it being per capita instead of per head count? Mm-hmm. Now, that means you've got, say you've got this population of 1,000 people, and you pay each place, if for each 1,000 people, you pay X amount of dollars, instead of saying we're paying X amount of dollars per number of kids that are in the system. Okay? So when you pay per number of children in the system, you watch what happened with Arizona and their taking of children just skyrocketed. I mean, it went up 80% in like a 3 or 4 year period. I mean, they just started just taking kids left and right. Arizona is not the place you want to be if you have children. Huh. Just saying. Don't even vacation. Don't travel. If you drive through there, make sure you have your pit stop before and after the state. Just don't stop in Arizona if you have kids, because it really is that bad. I'm scared of it. I refuse to travel there with kids.
What in the heck is going on in Arizona? Tell us a little more about that. That's pretty creepy.
Well, it's insane. You remember the Peterson? Is it Peterson, the government official that they have found was trafficking? He was just busted like last month for human trafficking of these women from the Marshall Islands and adopting out their babies. He was taking them in. Well, he's connected to Arizona. I mean, he's in Arizona, but he's also connected to Arkansas, like the Clinton area of Arkansas, and some judges that were adopting out kids and stuff. And social workers were literally referring parents that wanted to adopt to this guy for his adoption agency. And he was operating this adoption agency and he was working with people. And I mean, this, it goes a lot deeper, I think. And so you've got Phoenix Children's Hospital there, right in Maricopa County, which it takes more than by far, that's the biggest part of that of the children taken is in Maricopa County, Arizona. And and when the kids were taken there, it's rare that they get them back. And when they say they're going to terminate parental rights on a parent, it is like 1% of them ever get their kids back. I mean, it's insane. And I've seen them go to Nevada and take a whole family of screaming kids without justification that got free of Arizona, finally got to leave. And then they went back and took them out. I took them and then took them to Arizona. We know there's a lot of corruption. There was a late congresswoman in Arizona that I had talked with her before she had passed away. She had cancer, but she worked hard for children. And she said, Terry, what good does it do to pass more laws? They're not going to follow them anyway.
That's a good point. That's kind of where I'm at with a lot of the legislation. Like, what's the point?
So there's all this money, and then the legislators are not really in the loop as far as some of the funding. Some of that federal funding goes straight to the department. It bypasses the legislature. And so they're not really even able to have a voice in what's going on in their state, unfortunately. And it's twisted. It's twisted. And we know that a lot of the human trafficking goes through. And that's a whole nother story. Is the Department of Justice recently said that the largest supplier of children in America for the child sex trafficking trade is the foster care system, by far.
And this was admitted, by the way, folks. Let's underscore that.
Yes, by the Department of Justice, they admitted this. And we know that when they rescue children from human trafficking, when they talk to prostitutes and all of that, it's something like 88% of them were part of the foster care system.
Mm-hmm.
So it's huge.
I mean, it goes back when I was first hearing about this was the Franklin scandal, which was the book and then the subsequent documentary. I think that was like early 90s. Documenting what was going on in Nebraska, I believe, with the Boys Town and these people getting trafficked to D.C. and then coming back and ending up basically on Skid Row and the usual suspects of suicide and drug abuse and what you would expect from folks that have been abused like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they were being sexually molested and all of that. There was a case that I covered where a judge was sending some kids from another state, and he was sending these girls, beautiful girls, to Boys Town, Nebraska. And people got involved after. And somebody said, Terry, don't you know what Boys Town is? I was like, no, I didn't. I just knew that was what he had sentenced for all intents and purposes. Sentenced them to, but people got involved and made phone calls, and all of a sudden they let go of that case and these kids went home. Thank God. But they had been through so much torture in Child Protective Services in state custody. It was awful. But they did not go to Boys Town. But then that's when I started researching, and then I found actually there was a mom who had been trafficked herself as a child, and they took her baby, her 4-month-old baby, and the stories that she tells that she went through with the political blackmail. She called it blackmail season. These kids were being used for blackmailing politicians.
Of course, and, yeah.
Yeah, and just so much stuff that's coming out with the Epstein and all of this. This is not science fiction. This isn't some HBO movie. This is real life. This is really, really happening right underneath our feet, and most people have no clue what's going on. And the foster care system is literally supplying the children for this.
And before we get too far removed from it, who was the politician that was sending these young girls to Boys Town? Because I didn't even know that one.
It was a judge.
A judge?
In Michigan had written in his orders to send these girls to Boys Town.
Hmm. That doesn't sound suspicious at all.
No. No, not at all.
And I've talked about Nancy Schaefer several times, a representative in Georgia, who was uncovering kind of the same stuff as you in the CPS there in Georgia. And she, of course, mysteriously, or they would say not mysteriously, her and her husband were shot.
Yeah. I mean, and literally their funeral was at a church in the town where I went to Bible college.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She was, I mean, we probably knew some of the people, same people in common at the time, and I didn't know her at all. But from people that I've talked to, there's no way that her husband did this. And he was accused of being a murder-suicide, but it's there's little doubt that this was an assassination, because she was getting very close to exposing what was going on. We know that there was the legislator in Arkansas? Was it
yes,
Arkansas?
Yeah, you're right. I can't recall her name right now, but yeah.
Linda something. Was it Linda, like Colin Smith or something like that? I can't remember her name. And I see her face, and I'm sorry. But she was just about to expose things. She was looking for $28 million that was missing from their state's Child Protective Services fund. Mm-hmm. And she was on the verge of exposing a whole lot of stuff.
Linda Collins Smith found dead. That's what I got from Arkansas Senator Linda Collins Smith.
Yeah, and I have learned that there's definitely a lot to this. This was not some random person. She was taken out.
Mm-hmm.
What she was about to expose. But I do believe the information that she was about to expose is other people have it. So that information is still out there. It's going to be exposed. The things that she did not die in vain, I don't believe. I think everything she was working on will be exposed.
I certainly hope so. I mean, it seems to be a trail of dead, and the vast majority of the public hasn't connected all these dots. I mean, I can't recall this lady's name as well, but she was the DC madam. There was a gay male DC madam, which they sent to prison for 10 years, I believe. And then there was the female DC madam who, quote unquote, killed herself in her mother's garage, I think like 48 hours after she went on a program saying she would not kill herself. And, you know, the dots are just omnipresent. If people were just sort of, oh, well, that's odd. Oh, this Jeffrey Epstein thing, I think, is caught the zeitgeist a little bit because it's so in your face to people. I mean, there's so many other people like the folks we've just mentioned that are also just casualties in this fight, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, it's now become a verb, suicided.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez. So aside from just staying the heck away from the doctor and the judicial system, I mean, is there much people can do? I've talked to my own family members about this because I think a lot of people have this, and I mean, I get it because it's that sort of false sense of security. People think you're visiting the 1950s doctor in 2019 and you can just sort of, oh man, we just made it in here at 4:30 and sort of talk to the doctor. And I would say, you know, sort of be friendly-ish with the doctor and sort of tell him what's going on and so forth. But I always kind of tell people, if you have to go to the doctor, which I don't ever recommend, you know, just stick to the ailment and that's it. There's no need to get into personal history. There's no need to get into, man, me and so-and-so just got into an argument or anything. Just stick to the facts.
Remember, go to the hospital too.
Absolutely.
I can tell you out of the hundreds and hundreds of stories I've investigated, I've seen pediatricians report parents falsely plenty of times. Mm. I've never seen a family care doctor report a parent falsely. So they're still mandatory reporters, but they're reporting things that really are abuse because child abuse really does exist and it's a crime and it needs to be dealt with. So I mean, I don't ever want people to think that I'm saying child abuse doesn't exist. It does. But I've never seen a false report from a family practice doctor. So one of the things is their protocols versus the protocols of the AAP, the American Academy of Pediatrics, are very, very different. Many of the protocols for the American Academy of Pediatrics are written by these child abuse pediatricians. And it's very interesting when you start researching the medical literature. There was some kind of bold statement in some report written with the American Academy of Pediatrics, and I went to find out what's the source for it, because I like to find original sources. Definitely. So I went to the source, and it was a circular thing. This refers back to this, refers back to, and it was all circular. They were all quoting each other and making it up, and it was actually contrary to the actual truth. Because I actually, it was Dr. Christian is her last name, and it had to do with parents of children with disabilities. And she had asserted unequivocally that parents of children with disabilities are more likely to abuse them than parents with non-disabled children. And I thought, well, that's kind of weird. But you know what? They made it up, because the actual evidence is the opposite. Parents with children with disabilities are less likely to actually abuse them. But they are more likely to be accused of Munchausen syndrome by proxy, which is that condition where a weird, strange mental health condition where you abuse or you cause illness in someone for attention. Well, what I found is most of the time when that is diagnosed, it's diagnosed by a doctor who's never even seen the parent, usually the mother, and it's not really been a valid mental health diagnosis. It's done when the hospital there's medical malpractice going on. And it's a cover-up for medical malpractice. They just call in their child abuse pediatrician to look at a few records and say, oh, yeah, this parent's done this, this, and this. You know, they've taken them to too many doctors. They're doctor shopping, which, you know, if you've got a medically complex child and you're trying to find some answers, you may go to more than one doctor. And you're searching for answers. You're trying to figure out what's wrong with your child. But that in and of itself is a symptom of having Munchausen. So it's real circular and real unjust. And so good parents are being victimized by this system. And you know, you can't sue the hospital if your child's in foster care. Mm-hmm. So we've seen that happen quite a bit.
That's just horrible. I mean, I come back to this sort of statement sometimes where, you know, perception is reality, even if it's not true. And I feel that so much of this, and like to your point, I'm not saying it doesn't exist, because child abuse certainly does. But it seems to have become, I don't know the numbers, but $1 million industry, if not more. So, I mean, what was sort of the elements that were social engineering this thing now in 2019, where we have so many children being taken? I'll just say stolen. Because, I mean, I look back at perhaps my parents or my grandparents' generation, that this stuff just didn't happen. Or at least Child Protective Services wasn't swooping in and taking, I don't know the numbers, I'm sure you do, but like thousands of children per state. I mean, what in the world's going on? How did we change the perception to, like, everybody's a threat, we got to take the kids. Yeah, he fell down in the schoolyard and hurt his leg. Oh, no, we got to take the kid. Or, you know, what the heck is going on? How did we get to this point? How did this perception become shifted?
There is the federal funding, of course, that you follow the money.
Yeah.
Now, there's an organization called the Helfer Society. It is a kind of like you have the American Academy of Pediatrics, which is the Association for Pediatricians. The Helfer Society is an association for the child abuse pediatricians. And if you go to their website, it's H-E-L-F-E-R.
Okay.
And their website literally talks about how they need to educate judges and attorneys and the media and educate them to understand that what's happening and about these different conditions and all of that. So they are literally targeting people for propaganda was what we used to call it.
Yeah, that's the word to me.
I mean, it's marketing. It's marketing. If it was Tide, you would say, okay, they're saying they're the best and it's only their way. It's marketing their laundry detergent. But it's not Tide. It's child abuse. And they're marketing that these certain symptoms are always child abuse. And these are always things that are mean bad parents and you should take the kids. And they're wrong. It's interesting. There's a seminal paper from the 1960s called the battered child syndrome. You've probably heard of it.
Okay.
There was a book and there was even a documentary back all in the 60s. This was, and there's a history long before this, but they basically talk about the pediatric radiologist. Now the radiologist with the x-rays and stuff, these are the guys that are so clever. They're so clever that they can figure out that something is abuse when all these other doctors just can't figure it out. They're not clever enough to figure out that something was abuse, but they can look at the bones and the bones tell the story. Okay. And they marketed this. And after all of this, then right after Roe v. Wade, then we had CAPTA, the Child Abuse Prevention and Treatment Act in, I think, 1974. That basically started the federal funding for the foster care system and for taking children and accusing parents of abuse. So this started in 1974. It's a bipartisan effort and all of that. But the big, huge increase happened in 1997 with the Adoption and Safe Families Act that was Hillary Clinton's baby. She was very proud of that on the election campaign trail, how she had helped children. And it has really been probably the single most destructive piece of legislation ever. Because what ASPA did is it's a bonus to states that they can only get by adopting children out to strangers. They don't get it if they adopt them out to family members. They only get it if they adopt them out to strangers. Okay. And there is like $4,000 to $8,000 per headcount. Okay. And if the child is special needs, they're worth more money. Okay. They can make a child, and I've seen this happen time and time again, where they'll take a child that had no special needs when they entered the system, but they'll drug them, medicate them, abuse them, traumatize them, do enough that they cause them to become special needs in the system. They get a diagnosis of that, and then they're worth a whole lot more money. So, and then back to the ASPA, the Adoption and Safe Families Act, it also ties some bonus money to the increase of children adopted out. So say you have 100 children adopted out this year. In order to get this stream of funding, you have to adopt out 102 children out the next year. If you adopt out 98, then that whole bonus fund stream is gone. You can't adopt out less than you adopted out the year before. You have to adopt out more. So you say you adopt out 102. Well, next year you got to adopt out 103 or 4. So you've got to keep on increasing it every single year in order to get that funding stream. Well, anybody can tell you at some point you're going to run into critical mass where it's completely unsustainable. That's why they are taking children from innocent families. And back to the why with this perverse incentive. Children who are, and I've heard this from social workers and whistleblowers all over the country, children who are loved and nurtured, they're considered to be adoptable. If they come from good homes and they're good, they're adoptable. Children who are truly abused, who actually need intervention, they are considered by the system to be damaged goods who are unadoptable. And so they are more likely to be left in the homes.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a perverse incentive. And it's got to stop. And that's where we've been going. That's one of the huge reasons we've been going to Washington, D.C., is to talk to legislators about this and about how this needs to stop. They need to cut it off. There was one legislative aide that we met with that about 10 minutes into this whole conversation, I mean, he just, it was like the light bulb went off. He said, oh, so it's the federal funding, the federal incentive that's incentivizing this. We just need to cut that off. And I'm like,
bingo. Yes.
You got it. I wish Congress would get that.
So this ridiculous funding started in the 70s where they started funding this mess. And then it was basically put on hyperdrive with the Clinton legislation in the 1990s.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I keep wanting to do, and I should do it one day, I at the very least need to dedicate a show to all the atrocities just in legislation passed by the Clintons in 8 years. I mean, it is a lot. Just tons. I mean, this is another one that I didn't even know about. I mean, I can add that to my list of the other 8 or 9, but.
Well, and to be fair, there could be some congressmen who really, truly thought they were doing a good thing. It was marketed so clever. The Adoption and Safe Families Act. That sounds so nice.
Yeah, they always do that. It's always the inverse of whatever it says. Like the Patriot Act should be the doing away with the Bill of Rights Act. But they wouldn't call it that because they would get bad press. So it's the Patriot Act. And with this mess, it's the Safe Families. Safe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've got a friend who had a sign at one of our rallies, and she said, Child Protective Services, because it sounds so much better than child sex trafficking.
Exactly. Yeah. Kind of like the Planned Parenthood thing. They had to take away the eugenics angle, and now it's just Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, exactly. And then parents are being denied due process. The constitutional rights, they're not being applied in family court or juvenile court or whatever they call it, dependency court. They call it different things in different states. But when you're dealing with these children in child protective services, and divorce court, you know, dealing with custody issues, due process goes away. They're not being able to be heard. They're just being railroaded. Confidentiality is used as a smokescreen to shield the bad guys, those who are doing wrong, from being exposed to the light. So they say, oh, this is confidential for in order to protect the child and for the best interest of the child. And it's like, no, you're hiding what you're doing.
Precisely.
So families are told that, oh, well, the Constitution doesn't apply in family court because it's not a criminal court. The Constitution only applies in criminal court. Well, I just was re-listening to the Right to Lie case out of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, you know, which is known for being like probably the most liberal. And this judge is talking to this attorney who's fighting for a social worker. She's arguing that social workers have the right to lie in their documents and stuff to the courts in order to take children and keep custody away from parents. And that's routine. That happens all the time. Yeah, but she was arguing this in the Right to Lie case. I can send you the video. It's just stunning. And so she's arguing this, that there's not really something that says we can't do that. And this judge is going, it's a court. She's like, but he's like, no, it's a court. This is a fundamental liberty interest. And this is a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals judge going, and I'm like, yeah, he's applying this to every court. The Constitution does apply.
Of course.
The Constitution doesn't apply. Oh, no. The first half dozen times I heard it, I thought, these people are crazy. Of course the Constitution applies. But when you hear it hundreds of times from people all over the country, you know that this is happening. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. So many of the things that all the things that I say that about the different cases and all that, it's not that I've heard it once or twice. I've heard it hundreds of times from all over the country. They're playing from the same scripts. And it's taking away children's and parents' constitutional rights. Parentalrights.org, are you familiar with those guys? They've got a petition out right now, a whitehouse.gov petition to to have a constitutional amendment that secures the right that we really have, a God-given right, to raise our children. Mm-hmm. And so that's another avenue that people can go and sign that petition and call legislators and pray. But once you were asking the question about what can parents do, children are taken without court orders or warrants all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. Arizona, one of the supervisors admitted in a deposition that they never, ever, ever get a court order or a warrant to take a child. Never.
What? God.
Okay, normal thinking people would think, of course, what? But see, this is where the innocent, good, salt-of-the-earth parents get in big trouble and they lose their kids because they knock on the door. Mm-hmm. We need to see your child. We need to talk. And so the good, innocent parent that hasn't done anything wrong says, I haven't done anything wrong. I don't have anything to hide. Okay, come in. You're going to see that I'm right, that this is all just baloney. This is not anything.
Yeah,
and then they lose their kid because they come in and they're like, oh, what's that over there? You have dishes in the sink? Well, yeah, we just ate. I haven't washed dishes yet, you know.
Yeah.
All of these things happen that where the good, innocent parents just they don't realize that they don't have to let these people in, and they do, thinking that right is going to happen and justice is going to happen, and that's not the way it tends to work in the system. So you can require a court order or warrant, and sometimes they're determined enough and they'll go get it and they'll lie in their things to the judge and get it. So parents definitely need to have an attorney. If you're a homeschooler, definitely get homeschool legal defense or heritage defense is another one that that helps with CPS issues. Homeschool legal defense only really intervenes if it's a homeschool issue. And mm-hmm. social workers are that smart. They've realized that, oh, well, if we call it, we're taking them away for homeschool, and then they'll fight that. But if we call it something else, but our real reason is we don't like them homeschooling, but we call it something else, then they don't fight it, and we get to keep the kids. So it's just so insane. Parents need to know their rights and
yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. Insane. My God, what's going on?
Yeah.
I mean, I completely agree. I think most parents out there are that naive, and I hate to say that, it's not really meant to be a detrimental statement, but naive in the fact that they do just what you said, like, oh, that's okay. Like, and, you know, they let the camel's nose under the tent flap, and the next thing you know, the whole camel's inside, your kids are gone, you're sitting there going, what the heck's going on? And, I mean, you really have to be proactive and on the defensive, I feel, that when you're dealing with most of these things. It's so, so disheartening. But especially, you know, when you're talking about that court, I was thinking of the vaccine court, because it's sort of the same kangaroo court thing going on, where seemingly all constitutionality is just suspended. It's like, it doesn't matter anymore. You're in the vaccine court now. It's a special court. And from what you were saying, I mean, the CPS courts are much the same. It's like, it's all right. Sure, we'd need a warrant if we were searching your house. But forget about it.
You know, I was present for a case where they took the baby of a 14-year-old rape victim.
Oh, man.
She was raised by her grandparents, and she had told her grandparents, I will keep this baby and I will raise this baby and love this baby if you will help me. Mm. And they, of course, agreed. They were pro-life, and they said, of course. And CPS came in. They had asked me if I would come and be there. Actually, we're dealing with something. Anyway, so I ended up being there when all of this stuff was going on. I have never seen so many laws broken in all my life by the Shelby County, Alabama Police Department, by the hospital staff and by the social workers. In fact, the social worker, and I got her on video. She didn't know that I did it, but it's on YouTube now. And it's hard to hear her over everybody else in the room, but she literally says to the mother, she says, there are two people who don't need a court order or a warrant to take a child. And that is the Department of Human Resources, which is Alabama's CPS, and law enforcement. And I'm like, then, honey, what does the Fourth Amendment exactly apply to? Because that's who it applies to. So I saw so many laws broken, and they took a breastfeeding baby from this mother and just really traumatized her and the baby. And who knows how much damage, if that's ever going to be able to be repaired. And it was all done without a warrant, or it was done based on bogus allegations that we knew to be false at the beginning. It was just crazy. And so, but my point was how many laws I saw broken by the very people who are supposed to be protecting the laws and standing on the right, on the side of the laws. So,
it's such a weird quandary to me. I have to really ask myself, like, what in the heck is going on with these people? Like, where is your soul? I don't get it. I mean, just from my own personal fact here, like, I couldn't even think about doing that if I was the law enforcement or whatever, you know, agency involved. You know, at some point you got to say, hey, this is unethical and crazy. Like, we're not doing this. I mean, you would think.
Yeah, you would think. Now, the grandfather was a retired police officer, and he would get calls to go and back up Child Protective Services, and he would refuse to do it. If they didn't have a court order or a warrant, he wouldn't go with them, because when the police show up at your door with Child Protective Services, what they don't want you to know is that the police are not there to enforce taking your child. What they're there for is to protect the social worker. The social worker wants them to look there so it looks official, but they don't have the authority to take your child if they don't have a court order or a warrant or an emergency circumstance. Like, if they come up to the door and they hear the child screaming and being beaten, or they hear a gunshot, or they see flames jumping from the window, of course they can come in without anything. They can just come in and take the child to intervene because there's an emergency circumstance. That's what that is. But if it's just they heard a report, that's not an emergency circumstance. Or if a doctor says, oh, they left the hospital, and they'll do that. If people leave against medical advice, they'll say, oh, they left without medical advice, and they'll call Child Protective Services. Next thing you know, you've got an Amber Alert saying you've got violent parents that are armed and dangerous. With Amber Alerts. Yeah, they'll call, and that does happen. And they make up stuff. So 99% of the time, I ignore Amber Alerts. Now, of course, there are the occasional ones that are real, but most of the Amber Alerts are bogus. They're parents trying to protect their own children.
Yeah, I was telling someone the other day that I didn't think too much of Amber Alerts. And they're like, what do you mean? These are great. And I was like, it's way too much like a telescreen to me. You're going down the highway and they're just telling you what to do, and oftentimes, to your point, it's not what it appears to be.
Right. The ones we've investigated really have not been. Now, the 3-year-old that was taken in Birmingham, Cupcake, yeah, that one was legitimate. That one was an abduction. That was a valid Amber Alert. But many of them really are not valid. And so you got to look at the history of the Amber Alert system. You remember when with Haiti and the Clintons, and remember there were the people that were stopped by going out of Haiti with a bunch of children, and they were missionaries, and they were taking these children, they were trafficking these children, taking them out. Okay, and this woman, I forget her name, that was involved in that, she's a friend of Hillary's, and she's also very high up in the Amber Alert system. She's kind of one of the founding people. I rest my case.
Why am I not surprised? I knew that there was a Hillary Clinton connection. I didn't realize it was connected to the Amber Alerts as well. Wow.
Just so you know, I'm not, never have been, I'm not suicidal.
Me neither.
And I do pray for the Clintons. I pray that they will repent. I mean, I do. I pray for them. God tells us to pray for people and to bless those who curse you and pray for those who despitefully use you. And that's one of the tools that parents need to remember, too, is to pray, because this is spiritual warfare, very much so. Very much so. The enemy came to steal, kill, and destroy. And God is bigger.
It has to be. I feel like it has to be spiritual warfare. I mean, you can't just look at the things that are going on. And I hate to say this, but most of the people just don't know all the things that are going on. But I suppose I have an extremely jaundiced eye when I look at all this stuff, because I'm just going, we're doomed. Like, I don't see this turning around. I wish I could be more positive and say, okay, it's going to work out. But, I mean, barring some serious spiritual intervention, I don't think the humans have got the wheel at all. I think we have left the wheel. We're on the back of the boat, and it's just going into the rocks right now. I don't know.
I don't know if you ever read the Elijah List, or if you've ever heard of that. It's a website with prophetic words and people from all over the country and some in other places, the prophetic stuff and messages, encouraging stuff. I would encourage you to read those.
Oh, I need to get on with that. Yes, I definitely need some encouragement from time to time.
There's one guy, Johnny Imlow, out of California, had a couple of years ago. He said that God is exposing every pedophile network in the world, on the planet. Hmm. And I was like, wow, I'm holding on to that. I printed that one off. I'm like, so I know that God's working. He's doing things behind the scenes. There are things being exposed left and right. You know, 5 years ago, did you know any of this? Because I know I didn't.
No, just the back then it was just the basic Franklin stuff and the DC Madam, and now it's just sort of like it's everywhere. Every time you pull up a rock, you know, I think it was in Pennsylvania 6 or 8 months ago. It was like 3,000 Catholic priests were admittedly molesting children and doing all kinds of sick rituals, like this black mass with all these children, all this sick stuff, and that was like a blip on the radar, and then it went away. And I was like, well, what happened to that story?
And it was like the Mormon church, and then all these facilities group homes, a lot of these religious group homes are doing that. And so one of the things we've got to realize, too, is a lot of these religious church-affiliated group home kind of things, the people that are running those aren't your Baptist preachers and your Methodist preachers and your good little faithful people that love God. These are people that come in and they're from outside. They're not really part of that. And so pedophiles are attracted to stuff. They're attracted to Disney World. We know that. Mm-hmm. They're attracted to the church because it gives them a cover. So one of the things I liken this whole thing to is where, like, say in New York City, you've got a mafia organization. But out front, you've got this fabulous Italian restaurant.
That's it.
It legitimizes the whole thing because people come into the Italian restaurant. They got great food. It looks good. And it's a good establishment.
Yeah, I love going to Louis. Their pasta's fabulous. What are you talking about? They got a problem. Prostitution and drug running. That's crazy.
Exactly. But the real operation, that's just the front operation. The real operation's in the back. So that's what I think, like the foster homes and all of that. There are good, wonderful people who take in kids, who love kids, who really care. But the system has recruited them to give them a face that looks good, while the real business of child trafficking, occult, the medical stuff, all of that's behind the scenes. So you say something about foster care and they're like, wait a minute, Miss Susie down the street is a great foster mother and she loves those kids. Well, yeah, she probably does. She probably does. But the pedophile that's got the foster kids, no, he doesn't love those kids. Mm-hmm. And social services knew that he was a pedophile when they placed those kids with him. So, and of evidence, I'm not just pulling that out of a hat. In Los Angeles, there was in mainstream media a couple of years ago, a report where there was a list. They found a list of all the approved foster parents in the Los Angeles area. And then there was a list of all the registered sex offenders in the Los Angeles area. There were 1,000 names that were on both lists. Wow. Arizona, we covered a story where a little girl was placed in a home with a man who is now serving a 17-year sentence, federal sentence, for running a pedophile pornographic ring out of his home with foster children. And there was clear-cut evidence that this was going on, that the social workers and the guardian ad litem, Thea Gilbert is her name, was involved in. She knew, I mean, she wasn't involved, she was placing this child and keeping this child and arguing for this guy to adopt this kid, knowing that there was all this evidence. You had to be deaf, dumb, and blind not to see the evidence. So... And Thea Gilbert is still on that poor kid's case. That kid's still not with the family. She keeps on. Anyway, with that medical kidnap covered that story a lot, and other places covered that a lot. Other media.
Crazy. That's just so story. Insane. I mean, I literally had no other words than just satanic. I'm jokingly, a long time ago in episodes, I was joking because when I was a kid, my aunt would say that about certain things, and it became kind of humorous. But as I've grown older and as you peer into the abyss, you see, I mean, there's no other words. Like, what person in their right mind would put a child anywhere near a pedophile, anywhere near somebody doing pornographic films with children? I mean, what? That's just... beyond sick. I got no words. I mean, I got a lot of bad words, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is the reality. This is the reality. And so people say, well, what about, but I need to report this person or whatever, because they're not doing right by this child. And maybe they're not. Maybe they're not doing right by that child. Maybe you need to intervene. Maybe you need to take some action. Maybe you can help that family. But the thing you have to weigh out before you call Child Protective Services is what's happening to this child so bad that you are willing to risk the very reality that the real chance that they are at least 6 times to be raped, molested, killed, or abused, horribly abused in foster care than if you left them in their own home. Is what you're thinking about reporting them for that bad that it's worth risking that for that child? And I will tell you, out of the older kids that whose stories that I've covered, and I've been able to find out, I would say probably about 80%, 75 to 80% of the kids, the older kids, have been molested in foster care. None of them were molested before they were taken. So it's even greater. I mean, I would say easily 3/4 of these kids in that go into foster care are molested. And
like we all know, that just sort of sets that cyclical ball rolling again, because then they're going to be more likely to molest other kids. They're going to be more likely to be hard drug or alcohol users. They're going to be more likely to just keep on repeating the same thing.
Or keep on being victims. We know that the teen pregnancy is much higher in foster care. Death row, we've got more of death row people came out of foster care. Our prisons are filled with former foster kids. Did you know that Charles Manson was a former foster kid?
I heard that, yeah.
Like, okay, there's a lot there. This goes so deep. And But ultimately, we do know that God is good, and he said in the last days he will turn the hearts of the children to the fathers and the hearts of the fathers to the children. And that's a promise we've got to hold on to. And you've got to hold on to what God says. You've got to hold on to that no matter what you see happening in front of you. No matter how bad it looks, you hold on to what God has said. You hold on to the word of God, and you keep praying, you intercede, and you do something. You can't just be praying. You've got to sometimes put feet to your actions. You've got to do something. If you see Child Protective Services coming after your neighbor's kid, maybe you step in and you say something and you intervene. You go talk to your legislators. You go talk to people. You know, I wonder how much different it would be if Child Protective Services came to a house and all the neighbors came by and said, no, you can't take this one. Mm-hmm. We're all with this family and we support them and they're not being abused and you're not taking this kid. I don't know. What would happen then? You know, what would happen if 18 relatives came to the hospital room of the parent who didn't want to do a vaccination or was getting bullied and had some kind of false positive for a drug that they didn't even take in their and so they're taking the child for maternal drug use. You know, what would happen if there's a whole bunch of relatives there saying, no way, you're not taking this kid? I don't know.
I think that's a great point. And I think that's exactly what the heck people need to do. Cause I get so frustrated on this show and just in real life on the daily basis. Cause I'm going, where's the action? You know, I keep just, if you just scroll through the headlines for 5 minutes, I just keep, you know, reading this headline and going, and then the people stood up. No, they didn't. They just kept doing their thing. And then no one stood up again. And, you know, just like what you were saying, it would be so nice if the communities and the families would get together and say, hey, you know, we're not too busy. We're going to come over there and try to help you out. We're not going to be afraid of getting involved, which a lot of people are, or have that other excuse of, well, we don't know what to do. Well, do something. Like, you know, you got to get in the game at some point.
Yeah. And there's an attorney, Connie Reguli, out of Tennessee, who's probably one of the top attorneys that fights CPS in the country. And when she went to Washington, D.C. one time with us, and she was pointing out that, you know, sometimes, like, I deal usually with innocent parents who really haven't done anything wrong. A lot of times she deals with parents who have done something wrong, but it's something minor. It's something fixable. Should we destroy families because of something fixable, or should we leave the child in there and have community-based or peer-based, family-based people resources coming in there and helping that family to get over that hump? Maybe they did get their power cut off because they lost a job or something, you know, whatever, and then they just need help with their power bill. They don't need their kids taken away. That wasn't neglect. They're just on hard times. They need some help. You know, what if maybe they got on some drugs and it was not, they did something that wasn't smart, wasn't good. Do you need to take the child away, or do you need to work with getting that child in rehab, let the child have grandma come stay at the house for a little while to make sure that the kid's being taken care of? You know, there's all kinds of creative things that we can do, but as has been pointed out in Washington, D.C., the bulk of the money is for taking the children away. About 90% of the funding goes to taking the children away, putting them in foster care and adopting them out, whereas like 10% of the funding goes to keeping families together. That's a big problem, and we've got to change that.
Indeed. Wow. Well, I don't know where to leave this, but I guess my question would be, if someone's listening to this and perhaps is in one of those situations or knows someone that is, what's their best avenue to sort of defend their family, defend their children against these predators?
Learn everything you can. Learn everything you can. Start researching. You've got to be your child's best advocate. Many times attorneys are, sometimes they're overworked. Sometimes they're part of the problem. Sometimes you've got to figure out and do half the work for them. Get all your medical records. If it's a medical situation, get all the records, get every record that you can. Record everything. And if they tell you you can't record, maybe then you have a little plastic little thing that won't make a plastic record, something that'll pass something that's kind of, and you don't tell them you're recording so that you can write it all down because you have a great memory and you write it all down later. But do record everything. That's very, very important. Keep a paper trail. That's one of the things that people have found very helpful to keep the emails and stuff and things that are where, because if a social worker says something to you and it's not recorded, then they may as well not have said it. You don't have the record of it, unless you recorded it, but, keep the paper trail and find out how to do pro se litigation, like fighting for yourself. Sometimes those are the best ones that can help. There are some groups that are good that have some people that can help. There's Facebook has Mad Angels Army. There's Family Forward Project, and there's Families Against Government Abuse. And I think that was the one run by Sean McMillan out of California. On that one, he's got in the files, a lot of files of very useful information on Family Forward Project. Then there's also useful information in the files. Connect with other people who have been through this and never stop fighting. Never give up. Let your children know that you have fought for them. Encourage your kids to stay strong, to know that you are fighting with them, for them. Have a key word, some kind of way of letting your kid know, because the social workers a lot of times will tell parents, you can't talk about your case, you can't tell them this or that. Sometimes they'll tell them they can't even hug their kid in the visits or whatever. So find a way to communicate to your kid that you are fighting for them, that you're working for them. And then fight for the legislation, to educate legislators, get involved locally with local politics. Females, I know we've got Republican women's groups all around my state. You can get involved. You can kind of get to know who some of your politicians are and the people running for office. Then you can have a voice and you can start speaking into local politics, because this is local, state, and federal. It's on all of those levels. This is so multi-pronged. There's so many things that can be done. It's going to take all of it working together.
Definitely sounds like it. It seems pretty insurmountable, but I think you're right. As long as people still stay in the fight, you know, there's a chance to turn things around.
Yeah. And I will tell you, there was a case where I've seen a couple of cases where the children have been taken, adopted out, thought they were gone forever, and they're being turned around. There is hope. There's always hope. No matter what is happening, there's always still hope. You can't give up hope. I mean, of course you'll give up hope for a while. You'll cry and then you'll pray, and then you'll stand back up and you'll fight again. And keep on fighting. Never give up.
Well, that sounds like a good spot to leave it today. Where can everybody find your work and follow you and look at your articles and your investigative journalism?
I've got 4 years of stuff on medicalkidnap.com. They're still going and they're doing some great work. My name is not on most of the articles, but I was the lead investigative reporter for many years. And what we had decided to do was take our names off in order to protect our own families.
That sounds good. Yeah.
So, but that's got a lot of stuff. I'm at realnewsspark.com and I'm on Facebook. You can find me on Facebook at Terry LaPointe, and that's TerriLaPoint. And I'm on Twitter. I don't do a lot there. I do more on Facebook. And I'm probably fixing to pull back a lot here and write a book here very soon to try to put out a lot of this information.
Well, that sounds terrific. Well, you'll stick around for about 30 seconds. I'll talk to you off air.
Okay. Sounds great.
All right. Once again, I want to thank our guest, Terry LaPointe, for being with us today in the Anomic Age. Everything she was saying was connecting right up and syncing perfectly in with how I always close the show. You can't do everything, but you can absolutely do something. I think she gave us so many inspirational words there at the end that I hope will spark everybody's desire to do something. Get off the sidelines, get off the couch, do something. Doesn't have to be right, wrong, or otherwise, but you can at least put your iron in the fire and try to make a difference. So keep that in mind. Until next time, be safe out there, and we will see you next week in the Anomic Age. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Anomic Age, a John Age project. For past shows, further info, and to comment, go to AnomicAge.com. That's AnomicAge.com. Till next time, thank you for listening to The Anomic Age. I'm gonna go to bed.